Tall palm trees rustling in a breeze thrust towards the cloud-dappled sky on a sunny day in Maryborough, Australia, 1906. The point of view descends on a green garden with white trellises, an abundance of trees and shrubs, and a woman in a long dress pushing a baby carriage.
Winds in the east. Mist coming in. Like something is brewing. About to begin. Can't put my finger on what lies in store. But I feel what's to happen, or happened before.
A little girl in a long dress sits on the grass beside a pile of flowers, face upturned, hugging her knees. The girl becomes a woman in similar pose with her arms folded, eyes closed, sitting at a desk. An appointments calendar shows Sunday, April 2nd, 1961. A book is titled The Teachings of Gurdjieff, and amid Indian artifacts, there's a black and white photo of a family on a porch. The woman opens her eyes with a stern expression, gets to her feet, and smooths down her tailored brown jacket.
Mr. Russell.
Mrs. Travis.
London, England, 1961. Mr. Russell enters the 19th century terrace townhouse.
Like pink clouds on sticks.
Excuse me?
A cherry blossom. I was trying to think of what it looks like.
He checks his watch.
The car should be here by now. May I use the phone?
I cancelled it.
Yep. What? Pamela?
Mrs. Travers.
Mrs. Travers? Why would you cancel the car?
I shan't be going.
We've been through this.
I've changed my mind.
You made an agreement. You understand? A verbal agreement.
Why in the world are you speaking to me as if I were a neonate?
He's going to...
What? What is he going to do? Sue? He's very welcome to every penny I don't possess.
Look, I've represented you for a long time. I like to think of you as a friend. Yes, I like to think it. Believe me, I know it's not reciprocated. I would never suggest anything that would cause you anguish, but there's no more money, Pamela. Mrs. Travers, simply no more. Sales have dried up. No more royalties. You refuse to write further books, so...
He gestures in frustration.
Yeah, do you understand? I'm frightened you don't understand what that means.
I know what he's going to do to her. She'll be cavorting and twinkling and careening towards a happy ending like a kamikaze.
We've been trying to do this deal for 20 years. He's agreed to both your stipulations. No animation, script approval.
Use her to pay my bills. If I believed in a hell, I'd be sitting in its waiting room.
Script approval. He's never granted anything like that before. I don't know what else to do.
Mrs. Travers turns her head and folds her arms stubbornly. Russell clutches his forehead, then frowns as a thought strikes him.
Where's Polly?
I fired her. It's just as well. It seems I can't afford her anymore, anyway.
He puts his hand over his eyes as Mrs. Travers eyes him coolly.
You don't know what she means to me.
Polly?
Of course not, Polly! Sake. Los Angeles.
Mrs. Travers strides into her office next to the living room.
You only have to go and work there for 2 weeks. Collaborate. You haven't signed over the rights yet.
Yet?
You must make this work, Mrs. Travers.
Oh, I must I?
You need the money. I don't want to see
Stop
you go...
Stop saying money. It's a filthy, disgusting word.
I'm picking up the phone now, Mrs. Travers.
I have final say.
Standing over her as she sits behind her desk, Russell softens and puts down the phone.
You do?
I have final say. And if I don't like what they're doing to her...
Then you don't sign the papers. You can't make the film unless you grant the rights. It's an exploratory trip.
Mrs. Travers manages a nod.
What do you say?
Forehead creased with worry, Mrs. Travers looks around her office.
I want to keep my house.
The little girl in 1906 lies on the grass, peers through a little cabin made of plants, then, with a smile, places a pink blossom on top of the green leaves. The shadow of a man falls across her.
Excuse me, ma'am. Have you seen my daughter? I was quite sure I left her around here somewhere. Her name is Helen. No, Shirley. Good Lord. I've quite forgotten. Could it be Prunella?
No.
Pamela?
No.
I'm sure I have a special name for her.
Ginty.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Ginty it is, of course. Yeah. Now, have you seen her?
It's me.
With a frown of mock surprise, he crouches and stares into Ginty's face up close.
Gosh, so it is. Thank goodness for that. Oh, I was positive I was going to be beheaded for losing Her Highness, the Royal Princess Ginty MacFeatherFluffy.
Don't lose me.
Never. I promise. I'll never lose you. You ready? Are you sure? The adventure's about to begin. Come on.
Ginty climbs onto her father's back. He gallops off under a white pergola and through the lush gardens. On a plane, Mrs. Travers tries to wedge a large bag in the overhead rack. A flight attendant approaches her.
Can I help you?
I'm perfectly capable, thank you. They've used all the space. So greedy.
I'll take it, madam. I can put it up in front.
I don't want it up in front. I would like it here in the corresponding holding area for my assigned seat.
The flight's closing in just a few moments, madam. I'll have to take it. You can move mine instead. It's the grey one. Thank you.
The woman's holding a baby. The young mother smiles sweetly at Mrs. Travers.
Will the child be a nuisance? It's an 11-hour flight.
Awkward for both the mother and Mrs. Travers.
Jolly good.
The mother smiles, not quite able to believe the exchange, and Mrs. Travers settles in her window seat with a pained expression.
I hope we crash.
A view through net curtains looks out at Ginty on her father's back and a motor car.
Where's the carriage?
Carriage? Who needs a carriage?
Well, darling, we have so many.
A leisurely stroll is a gift, darling. It's a gift. Now, Biddy, are you staying?
Mm-mm.
You're coming with us?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Ginty's father consults a pocket watch.
Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you, miss.
Right, hurry up, everyone. We mustn't be late for the train.
Ginty's mom takes a baby from a nanny.
All aboard! Everybody ready?
Yes. See you soon, Katie, Nana.
Take care, love.
All right. Everybody ready?
Ginty's dad takes all the bags.
Walking bus. Left, right.
Miss.
Left, right. Left.
Miss, thank you.
A maid fetches a plant and carries it down the porch steps to Ginty's mother, who walks away. She turns back to stare at the large wood frame house surrounded by trees and sun-dappled lawns.
Left, left, right, left. And one, two, three, new town, new job, new bank, new life. Come on, my little ducklings. Right, left, left. Come on. Come along, come along.
The family hurries after Dad through the picturesque, affluent town where the streets are alive with smartly dressed folk and some of the new motor cars. They wait for a car to pass, then cross the street. They arrive at the railway station. Ginty looks up at a sign showing the destinations for the Australia Gold Coast Railway from Maryborough Station. The end of the line is Allora, 325 miles away. Dad holds open the wood and glass door. A steam engine with a large cow catcher on the front, belching smoke from its stack, crosses a low viaduct in flat, sun-baked country. Ginty looks out from the back of the last carriage towards trees receding in the distance and being replaced by scrub. Mom glances disapprovingly at her husband as he takes a nip from a metal hip flask. At the back of the train, Ginty stands and stares expressionlessly as, wreathed in plumes of smoke, it heads towards distant arid hills. The smoke becomes clouds, passing Mrs. Travers' window as she sleeps on the British Overseas Airways Corporation British Airlines flight.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are beginning our descent into Los Angeles.
Mrs. Travers tries to compose herself. With a deep frown, she walks through crowds past a large sign proclaiming, "Welcome to Los Angeles." At arrivals, men in suits hold up cards bearing the gilt shield logo of Warner Brothers and the roaring lion surrounded by a garland of gold film of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Disney's card has a sketch of Mickey Mouse and Walt Disney's flamboyant signature. It reads, Walt Disney presents P.L. Travers.
No, he does he?
Travers, P.L. Travers?
Mrs.
Okay. Well, welcome, Mrs. P.L. Travers. Welcome to the City of Angels. Let me take those.
Perfectly capable. Oh, never mind.
The bespectacled driver carries Mrs. Travers' bags out of the bustling terminal into the California sunshine.
Sun came out to say hello just to you.
Don't be preposterous. It smells like...
jasmine.
Chlorine. And sweat. It's dreadful.
The driver wears a puzzled frown as he helps Mrs. Travers into a large black limousine. He sniffs the air. They drive past an oil field with its rocking, pumping derricks. Mrs. Travers looks out of the window with an appalled frown. They pass a car wash, and she grimaces, then notices two crystal decanters, glasses, and some white roses in a vase in front of her.
Absurd.
You right back there, Mrs. P.L. Travers?
It's not Mrs. P.L., it's just Mrs. Oh, it's so hot.
Oh, no problemo. No problemo. We got a brand new air conditioning system, Mrs. Yeah. That'll make you feel like you're in good old Angerland again. Well, you know, things they can put in cars these days. Gosh, oh my.
She slams shut the glass partition.
No problemo.
The stretch limousine cruises towards the lush green driveway of the Beverly Hills Hotel. A uniformed bellhop leads Mrs. Travers down a plush carpeted corridor with tastefully decorative lamps.
And here we are, ma'am.
As he unlocks the room, she picks up her bags and enters, barging past him.
Thank you.
Ma'am? Would you like me to unpack for you, ma'am?
Young man, if it is your ambition to handle ladies' garments, may I suggest you take employment in a launderette? Odd.
Mrs. Travers walks down the short entrance hallway, stops dead in her tracks, and drops her bags in shock.
Oh, dear. For heaven's sake. What on earth is...
The room is festooned with stuffed Disney toys and memorabilia. Words fail her until she spies a fruit basket, which troubles her even more.
No. This will never do. Absolutely no pears.
She takes the pears out of the basket and out onto the sun-drenched balcony.